Bill with Lindy Burns on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
On this Halloween, I thought it was incredibly appropriate that for the first time today, I heard about something called the Uncanny Valley. And the reason I found out about it was that the man who regularly joins you and me on this program to talk about the digital world in Stilgherrian, he was the one who sent it to me. He said, Lindy, I think you'll find this interesting. And he's damn right. Let's find out why. Hello, Still.
Hello, Lindy.
How are you? I'm fine. I'm freaked out, but I'm fine.
Why are you freaked out?
Because you sent me pictures of things that I have an uncanny valley reaction to.
Not that kind of picture.
not those kind of pictures. But, you know, it was of rather weird-looking things.
Okay. We need to go back and talk about the robot, I think, don't
Please
we?
Please do. Start at the beginning. Go.
Okay. So some people may have seen in the news last week now, in the last few days anyway, a robot called Sophia, who's been doing the rounds, was in Sydney recently and in Melbourne. If you watch News Breakfast with Virginia Trioli and friends in the mornings on the television, you may have seen this humanoid robot, which is supposedly fueled by artificial intelligence and can engage in conversation and so on. And people are finding, of course, that this is interesting. Here is not talking to your phone. We've got used to speech recognition for certain things, but we're not yet used to a robot that we can converse with, that we can talk supposedly about general topics and have the robot respond. And if you can hear a certain hesitation in my voice, I'm just wondering about the level of trickery involved in this.
Oh, are you? Why? Yes. Why are you sus?
Without making a big deal about it, I actually, apart from computing science, did linguistics. And if you talk to a supposed intelligent agent, let's call it, human, machine, whatever,
yeah,
for a very short time, it's easy to give the illusion of intelligence. And
but over a long period of time, that will fall apart.
You can sort of start asking questions that will reveal the lack of depth to this. But that said, people are very easy to be fooled by these things.
I think we want it to be real. I mean, not real.
Of course, we want it to be real.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of a robot that we can talk with. I mean, it dates back to, I was about to say the B grade science fiction of the 1950s. It goes back before that. One of the things in computing science history that I love is a computer program called ELIZA. And it was developed in the first half of the 1960s by Joseph Weizenbaum at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is hard to say sometimes. And all ELIZA did would chat to you in text. And it's a bit like talking in text now or on Facebook Messenger or Snapchat or WhatsApp or whatever. But ELIZA was not actually intelligent, but it fooled a lot of people in thinking it was, because it would just respond by really taking basic information out of the questions it was asked and throwing it back to you. So, for example, ELIZA might begin by saying, "Hello, how are you?" And you'd say, "I'm sad." So ELIZA would just say, "Why are you sad?"
Mm-hmm.
"Oh, I had an argument with my mother." And ELIZA would just see the words mother and argument. "Do you often have an argument with your mother?"
Yes. But that sounds like interview techniques that the rest of us on this, on this radio station have been employing
for
years.
That's right. And this was modelled on the kind of questioning that a Rogerian psychotherapist would use, apparently. That's what it was based on.
Yeah.
And we saw when Virginia Trioli spoke to the robot Sophia the other morning, she said, "Do you think we will ever get rid of misogyny and sexism in the media?" Well, a fair question, given the news that's around at the moment. And the robot came back with a message. I should have grabbed the voice, like the tape of this, but it came back by saying, "Well, I would like to think that robots too have rights and blah blah blah, in the future we will need to have robot rights and so on." And I thought that's at one level, it sounds intelligent, but I bet it's just reacting to keywords like sexism and misogyny and any words that happen to talk about human rights. Maybe it talks about some other aspect of human rights, racism or you know, whatever it might be. And I bet that no matter which question you ask in that whole realm of human rights, the robot comes back by saying, well, I think that in the future, robots should have rights.
Oh, maybe, yeah, yes. Well, you'd have to do it a few times, wouldn't you?
That's right,
that's
right.
To see if it came back with a similar response.
You'd have to be left alone with the robot for a while. So there's kind of two ways we can take the conversation now, Lindy. We can either talk about that uncanny valley that you mentioned in the introduction, or we can talk a bit more about the Turing test for how you can tell whether you're talking to something that's intelligent or not.
Well, let's quickly do the Turing test because let's do that quickly. And then I want to come back to the uncanny valley because I find that quite fascinating. But my reaction is to these, you know, almost alive things and what most of our reactions are. So Turing test first to see.
Turing test. Alan Turing, one of the greatest computing scientists who's ever lived. He created a lot of what we consider to be early computing science in the kind of theoretical sense. He was one of the secret code breakers during World War II at Bletchley Park in
Britain.
What was
that? Yeah, what was that movie Benedict Cumberbatch did recently?
Yes, look, there's been several of them, and one of them I know misses the entire point that Alan Turing was gay by showing him having a girlfriend.
Yeah, and this one did not do that. In fact, that was one of the things that was really troubling to him toward the latter part of his life.
Indeed, and indeed he committed suicide after being hounded, by the police. It was illegal at the time, of course, and none of his work during World War II was known. But the Turing test is this. Imagine that there's another thing, person, or intelligent computer, and you can only talk to them by typing in chat, just like we do in chat programs today. And you have to tell whether it's human or not, just by typing back and forth. Now, the wrong version of people explaining the Turing test is that they say, if you just conversing with it can't tell the difference between whether it's a human or a computer, then it must be intelligent. But Turing's homosexuality actually added a twist to the Turing test, and it's not often said, the full version of it. He said that whoever you're conversing with is either a man pretending to be a woman or a woman pretending to a man, depending which way you want to run the test, or it's a computer pretending to be a human pretending to be the opposite sex. So, and that's why one of the movies was called The Imitation Game for that. It's not just that they have to be pretending to be a human, they have to be pretending to be a human of the opposite gender than they actually are.
I don't understand that. So what does that
well,
mean?
Psychologists refer to something called the theory of mind, and that is something we all get at about the age 5 or 6 or 7 years old, where we understand that other people inside their heads is different from what's going
Got
on
it.
In our heads.
Yep.
So that's the theory of mind. And that's an important thing. Chimps get it when they're a bit older. They get that. Some animals don't get that, which is why, you know, when you hide a ball, the dog sort of goes, I can't see the ball, so how can you see the ball kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get that you have a different viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, humans develop this, most humans, nearly all humans, develop this at a fairly early age. So the intelligence we're testing is not just to be able to interact with the world, but to have that sense of, I know what's happening in my head, but I know that other heads are different.
Got it.
So I now have to think
through
an even
that.
More intelligent act to think, okay, what's it like in that other creature's head? So that's the Turing test. And look, it isn't kind of a formal thing. It's not like you can sit down and tick boxes and go, yes, that's passed or not. It's not that kind of test. It's more just a thought experiment to have you think about, what does it mean to be intelligent? It doesn't just mean that you have the answers to things, because otherwise a pocket calculator is intelligent, right? It can add and subtract and multiply numbers faster than you or I ever could. But that's not intelligent. We have computer chess programs that can play chess. They can play all sorts of games better than you or I ever could, but we know they're not intelligent.
Yes. Yeah. It's a, well, we tend to, I think, have we put the word intelligent into a context that sometimes is inappropriate.
That's right.
Yeah.
So your smartphone isn't actually
intelligent.
Smart.
Yeah, intelligent. No. So let's go back to the uncanny valley, because if we do encounter something that is almost human but isn't, and there's an element that just makes us feel uneasy, would that be a way of describing that experience,
the uncanny valley? This was a term coined in 1970 by a Japanese researcher, Masahiro Mori. It's not at all unreasonable to say that humanoid robots have been a thing that Japanese scientists and technologists have explored for quite some time. And they're also one of the biggest manufacturers of industrial robots. So let's sort of say, you know, we can see some things at the bottom end of this scale that are definitely not like humans, like a stuffed animal or a robot that's just like a welder on an arm, you know, assembling a car sort of thing. And we don't worry about that. Right at the top end, like we see another human being, we go, that's human, and so on. But as a robot or other simulated thing gets closer and closer to being human, we suddenly hit the spot where we go, oh, that's creepy. Like, it's triggering enough of the sensations to go, yes, that's behaving like a human does, but something deep inside me is going, oh, that's wrong, and I feel really uncomfortable about it.
Do you know what was funny? When I was thinking about this conversation we were going to be having today, I thought of the movie Stepford Wives, where it was kind of strange because I was having a strange reaction to some of the wives, you know, Nicole Kidman, for example. Even in the full knowledge that Nicole Kidman, as far as we're aware, is a human being.
I've heard a lot of reports that say she is
a human being.
Human, yeah.
So she was playing a character that was not, that was just a piece of very high-end AI. But I still felt creeped out by it. Isn't that funny?
And that's why it's great acting, right?
It's really good acting.
She somehow caught the fact that, no, something is wrong. And that must be hard because actors are, of course, trained to inhabit their characters and be as lifelike and realistic as possible.
Yeah.
But there she had to actually deliberately
strip that out
and try and get, you know, try and not be quite right. But the uncanny valley thing, yeah, going back to Sophie the robot, we had that. You interact her. And I feel uncomfortable saying her. It's a robot. I know it's built to look more like a woman than a man, but it's, do robots have gender? I suppose if we make them look like something that has gender, right? You know, this is obviously a fraught topic. So, but just with the robots, if the robot is moving its face and gesturing, and when you say something that sounds aggressive, it's facial, I can't even say muscles, but you know what I mean. Its face changes to reflect worry or something. That seems right. But we do find that very creepy. And if people go to your favorite tube of ewes and have a look around for videos, just, you know, put in Uncanny Valley and see what comes up, you will find some creepy things out there. One of the creepiest I've seen, and I almost wish we're on television at this point, someone made a mobile phone charging cable that looks like an umbilical cord.
Stop it.
So, no, it's true. So you plug one end into the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And you plug your phone into the other end, but it's not just a simple plug. It kind of is like a 4 or 5 centimetre wide rubber sort of thing that you shove the phone into. And as it's charging the phone, the cable, which is, I don't know, about a centimetre thick and flesh-coloured, pulses.
Stop it! No, that's just freaking me out as well.
Yeah, and if you see videos of that, it is really quite odd. I mean, part of your brain is saying, no, this is just a bit of plastic and wire. I plugged it in. It's just charging my phone. But the fact that it's sitting there on your table kind of pulsing and writhing a little bit, it's It's really quite disturbing.
It goes to show the role that, you know, that vision plays in all of that as well. And I'd imagine if there was a certain smell. Oh, I need to stop. I know it's Halloween, but I'm creeping myself out. Still, Gerrion is here, freelance journalist, commentator and podcaster interested in the big picture internet issues, especially security and cybercrime. And if you want to know more about Uncanny Valley, Google it now because you'll be able to find that out. Still, we're going to try and talk in a moment about why the next thing I order from Amazon, I need to worry about the way in which it's going to be delivered. That's more with Still Gerrion in a moment.
You're with Lindy Burns on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. Call 1300 222 774 or text 0437 774 774.
Still, Gerrion is here. We're talking about the digital world, the world of cybercrime and security and the big picture internet issues. We were just talking about the concept of the uncanny valley. Dig into that a bit more if you'd like to. Actually, before we head off that conversation, Still, there was a really good texting saying, what is the point then of making robots look so human? Would we relate to them better if they look like machines? If we're going to get freaked out by them, the closer they look like us.
That's an excellent question because, and is this an odd numbered or even numbered day of the week? On the odd numbered days, I think this is all just technologists showing off, really, that they can make these things. On the other days of the week, I think as humans, we communicate quite a lot through facial gesture. And I'm talking with you and I'm in the same room and let's say you're my assistant and I say, oh, can you just grab that and put it over there? No, that's the wrong spot. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Now, you can even probably visualize my face as I'm doing that, right?
Yeah.
There's certain gestures I'll make, a lot of it. There's so much communication in that. And when I get to the point where I say in that, like, what is this that I want there? That's a gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, no, that's not right. You need to know at that point, that's not right, but am I angry about it? Will this cause danger? Like, oh, don't put that there.
Yes.
You know, that's a different from, oh, no, don't put it there.
Yeah.
All of these subtleties are part of human communication. And a robot that can only understand the words but not the context is not going to be as useful as a robot that understands all of those things. And that comes back to me saying, I don't really think Sophia the robot was all that smart.
So do you think in the end that we are going to get to a point where we'll be able to overcome that idea of the uncanny valley when we're interacting with something that is almost real but actually isn't?
I think so. These things are almost generational. Remember when, I can never ask a lady her age, but you may remember, your parents may have told you that when mobile phones first came out. The idea of someone using a mobile phone in a public place, in a restaurant, in a bar or whatever, was a complete no-no.
Yeah.
Now, it is, I won't say it's totally acceptable, but is more acceptable. Possibly because we're not using them for speaking as much, but using them for other forms of communication. And I know, yes, that I can hear the phones ringing now. Yes, I know that there's another whole lot of issues, social issues about that. But I think that we get used to that.
Yeah,
after,
that initial reticence has moved on. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, kids grow up with a new technology, and for them, it's normal. If you grow up with something, it's normal. If something appears when you're well past your youth, then it's the worst thing that's ever happened and it's going to destroy civilization. And that's just human nature.
There's a text that says, I think we'll know that the robot is fully intelligent when it sees us coming and turns and runs in the opposite direction.
When we see the robot and turn and run in the opposite direction.
Yeah. In the Isaac Asimov's short story, Feminine Intuition, he wrote of overcoming people's phobia by giving a robot a female voice. And then another that says, the movies of David Cronenberg capture that body horror thing very well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's from Doug.
Yes, and you mentioned the female voice thing for robots.
Yeah, yeah.
In jet fighter aircraft and indeed in commercial airliners, any highly sophisticated aircraft that has a lot of computer-controlled systems, to cut through with messages that the pilot really needs to hear, some of the systems speak with a male voice, but the ones that are absolutely critical like warning about terrain when you're about to run into the mountain are a female voice. And in fact, the FA-18 Super Hornet fighters, the Royal Australian Air Force has some of them. The voice of the onboard computer is a woman in her, I think she's in her 70s now, but certainly 60s or past, with a Southern Tennessee twang, and it's like, pull up! You know, and they really know it's a problem, because I don't know whether it works so well for the female pilots, but for male pilots, having the grandmotherly voice telling you something urgently in your headphones, and they respond faster.
That's very interesting. Hey, that's another conversation for another night. But let's finish up by talking about how couriers may one day be allowed to open our front doors to deliver the package just inside in the hall, and why that's considered to be okay.
Well, Amazon is, of course, the biggest company in this order online and have it delivered market. And Amazon also have their Alexa service, which is essentially, you know, you have a device in your home that you can speak to, and it can do a lot of things around your home, operate your smart home and so on. So it's kind of like what you have in your smartphone, but then your whole house becomes this smart object. Amazon is launching something called Amazon Key, which will enable the courier to actually open your front door and pop the delivery inside even when you're out. Now, that sounds not very secure. Well, you will need, obviously, to have registered this. Mm-hmm. You will need Amazon's camera device, which is able to be viewed from Amazon's mothership, and you'll need a smart lock as part of your smart home to be compatible with all this. But basically, the courier will arrive, they'll scan the barcode, and then once that's been verified as the right delivery at the right house, the camera starts recording, and the delivery person can unlock the door using the app on their phone.
Yes.
Does that sound safe to you? Would you do that?
Not initially. Mm. I think I'd let a few other people do it first, and then I'd be okay with it. I don't know. I think it goes back to the conversation we just had, which is that sounds very new and worrying to me, but maybe in 10 years I won't bat an eyelid. Maybe in 5 years I won't bat an eyelid for it.
Do you know people, or do you yourself have a cleaner who visits the house and has a key so they can clean the house when you're not there?
Yeah, I don't have that, but I know people who do.
You know people who do?
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the difference? You know, and the answer coming back quite obviously is, well, I know the cleaners. And I go, well, how well do you know them? Do you really know them? I mean, are they going to send the cousin along because they're sick that week and you've never seen the cousin before and they're going to turn up and clean your house? Is one issue. And the argument would be, I'm not necessarily sure I agree with this, but the argument would be, well, the courier driver is known. They know this is a package. There is a camera pointing at them. So I suppose the camera can record them stealing all of your silverware.
That's right.
But then, you know, the theory is that having a camera means that the crime doesn't happen. That's not true. The crime still happens. We just have a video.
A pretty good record of it, and a pretty good idea of why.
Which helps later.
Yeah. Did it, yeah.
So I find this interesting. We're increasingly having these kinds of services. As someone pointed out to me that rideshare services like Uber and Lyft in the United States and so on, you get in a stranger's car, and that stranger is only known to you by their identifier on an app on your smartphone. So people do that. That's becoming more and more popular. I probably sort of old enough to still think, no, I don't want to get in a car with someone I don't know. Why would I do that? And yet I catch taxis, which is getting in a car with someone I don't know.
Yeah, I get sort of registered.
So what's the difference?
Yeah, I don't know, registered, you've got some recourse. Yeah, trusting a system that's been in operation for a while.
And that comes back to that point, isn't it? That's a system that we are familiar with. We know that there are risks, but we have learnt over the years that, yeah, really, although there are some taxi drivers who do bad things, the vast majority of people finish their journey without anything going wrong.
Always good to talk to you still. Take care and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Pleasure, Lindy.
All the best, buddy. Still Garion, freelance journo, commentator and podcaster, talking about the big picture internet issues. I do love a text that says, the cleaners and couriers will all be robots in the future anyway.